Geopolitics in Conflict Show. Very excited to be with you. As you can tell, I am not here with Elizabeth, and I am not at the studio. I'm doing it remotely. Something came up for Elizabeth, so she couldn't make it. So I decided, well, we're going to just move on with it. I'll do it by myself this time around, and she'll be back next week. So anyway, very, very excited to be with you, as always. And same with Elizabeth. We pretend like she's here with me, so... I got an interesting topic to talk to you about today, and this one pertains, of course, to what's taking place in India. I know there are other issues out there, like, for example, what happened yesterday in Moscow, that the Russian president has to be rushed to the Kremlin in the middle of the night. Something major. So, but nonetheless, we were thinking about this one here because we came across an article that was issued by Bloomberg, and of course was published by the RT, but the original content of it was from Bloomberg. And this begs the question, are you going to believe what Western media is saying about India? Why? It's because, simple as that, India is being used by the West. So any narrative that can push India to the forefront, it will be good. That's the argument, at least. Well, here's the thing. I'm going to just share the title with you. Of course, we put the link for you and all that later on. The title reads this: India could take a growth crown from China, according to Bloomberg. I mean, I'll let you just think about this. No, I don't care for those who say, well, you don't like India, you're hearing. That's nonsense. That is a weak argument. We are presenting the facts here. I mean, you and I know the truth about what are the possibilities of taking over an economy. Usually that could happen in certain specific cases. One of them has to do with infrastructure. This is with the assumption that your infrastructure is up to standard and up to date. Your investments in technology, in science, in math, and you name it. Okay. But the key is if you don't have infrastructure that can support that growth, you will go nowhere. And this is exactly what we have been hearing from India for the last 10, 15, 20 years. India is going to take over the world economy. India is going to take over China. It's nonsense. The reason we are hearing all this, it's coincided with the elections, of course, that is taking place. And of course, the idea of how now all of a sudden certain social media been shut down. Twitter's been shut down in certain parts there. I was aware of it, that certain members in the government decided to shut down Twitter, or X, that is. Why would you do that? It's because Mr. Modi had to push the narrative that can sort of fit in within specific segments of society. We all know. We all know the ethnic tensions that exist. As a matter of fact, a recent article just came up, as a matter of fact, today, 23rd of April. It says, by which, and I quote here, Indian Congress Party demands action against Modi over remarks offensive to Muslims. So if you are to think about if Modi a uniting figure or is he's creating divisions based on ideology. I'll let you decide for that. For us, suffice it for now to focus on really what's into this India taking over China in the next few years. 2 years, they say. As a matter of fact, the article mentioned in about 2028. That just doesn't make sense, you know. And here is where, you know, and like we always say, guys, on the show, we provide you the assessment. We provide you the analysis. We let you reach your own conclusions. But to me, as a geopolitical analyst, I've learned over the years how to read the narratives coming out of either the government or mainstream media. And this is why, the moment I read the title, India could take growth crown from China, I was just shaking my head. I was just shaking my head because I know it ain't going to happen. India does not have the necessary infrastructure to do so. And the way you get into and understanding all this, you look at, for example, the first paragraph of an article. It says, and I quote, the world's most populous nation may soon overtake its neighbor as a leader in global growth by 2028. The outlet reporting, meaning Bloomberg. Well, here is a problem. This is the first problem. You having the most population in the world, in other words, you are the most populous country in the world, does not translate to you being at the top of the economic hell on the global stage. Now, as a matter of fact, in the case of India, and please, guys, correct me if I'm wrong, in the case of India, it's the reverse. It is causing more problems for India than it is resolving it. Once for all, is the poverty level is going. The gap between the have and the have-nots is widened beyond. A poor and crumbling infrastructure to add to that. Then you add an element of the unemployment. You know, I know people inside India. They are qualified academically, educationally, and they don't have jobs. So whose responsibility becomes? The government, that is. In the meantime, Mr. Modi is focusing on pushing certain narrative as far as ideology at the expense of the welfare of all Indian people. Not the Muslims, not the Hindus, not the Buddhists, whatever. All Indian. And again, we are not judging India here. We are presenting the facts and the arguments based, for me personally, I am reacting to this article because when I read it, I was just shaking my head because I couldn't believe that. I've heard this before. I've heard it even back in the days when I was in Washington. Oh, India's going to take over the world by 2020, or the economy, that is. India's going to take over China. But no, it's nonsense. And we in the West, pushing this narrative for a reason. Why? Because we want India to feel good. And when India feels good, it does what we ask it to do. Simple as that. No. Because here's the thing. Nobody's denying that India today is not India of 20 years ago. You know, I'm not arguing that. But to go as far as saying, well, the purchasing power in India will outstrip that of China, I'm like left to wonder, you know, what is this based on? I even, you all remember one time I had a conversation with the giant Bandari, you know, somebody who understands. As a matter of fact, we're going to bring him on this channel here on geopolitics in conflict. We're going to bring him in for an interview and we're going to have a conversation. And he and I remember discussing that, you know, the numbers coming out of India do not reflect the reality of what's going on. Now, we're not saying just India does that. Other countries that. My own country right here is doing it. When Biden said that the economy performing at 4.9%, when it was a lie, it was not performing. As a matter of fact, the inflation right here in the U.S. is still going up. We're looking at aggregate inflation at about 34%. So what the government is saying, it's a 7%. It is. I'm talking about the aggregate inflation. In other words, inflation never went down. So, and what the government does, my government here, or our government, that is lying to the American people. So I'm not saying it only in India. It's elsewhere. You know, China, I don't know. Because this last one that from China's GDP stated 5.9. Okay? But at the same time, we are not going to deny or not state the fact that China made a mistake during COVID. That's what it ended up hurting its economy. So, and those are not just my words. I read enough to look into different sources. And what I found is that during the last economic forum, the last one, which means last week, it took place in Shanghai. It was a senior Chinese government advisor by the name of Liu Yansun, who happens to be also the president of the Shanghai University of Finance and Economics, okay? And he made some very eye-popping remarks about the state of the Chinese economy. You know, and to me, you appreciate something like this. Why? Because the guy stayed in the facts. And we're not going to sugarcoat it. You know, China made the mistakes during COVID. Maybe that works for them at that time, but only to realize later on that it did not work. But to go as far as what some Western analysts saying, oh, after COVID, the Chinese economy is going to collapse, that's pushing the envelope. That's beyond what's rationale. It's kind of, come on, come on. I was, again, laughing at those Western analysts stating that the Chinese economy is going to collapse. It ain't going to collapse. It's because the sheer size of the Chinese economy, no matter how you look at it, the world cannot live without access to Chinese market. Simple as that. You also, who visited China last week? Olaf Scholz was before him. U.S. Treasury Secretary. And who's going to be going there soon? Secretary of State. You got the idea. Italian Prime Minister is planning to go there as well. So you all see that most of the Western world is going to China, not to India. Even though, let me finish this statement by Mr. Liu Yanchun. You know, he said, and I quote, "The effect of COVID-19 were far worse than expected, and that the fiscal standing of local governments is deteriorating quicker than thought. Seismic structural shifts are happening rapidly, and more non-economic risks are emerging than economic ones. All of this has created imbalances that Beijing is struggling to navigate." End of quote. And once again, we are talking about ensuring some sort of an equilibrium in the market here. So China is not impacted by what took place during COVID due to its own policies. But to go as far as saying, well, the Chinese economy is going to collapse, that's kind of beyond, you know. Or you go even as far as India is going to take over China's economy by 2028. Well, India does not have the luxury of even stating something like this because it defies logic. It's not right. Like what's his name? Marcus Aurelius. You all remember him, right? What did he say he was known for? If I ain't right, if it's not true, don't say it. If it's not right, don't do it. So it behooves the Indian government not to be stating just some hypes like this because average Indian person is counting on the government sort of to uplift his or her standard of living. But when you have still crumbling infrastructure, when you still have bridges collapses, when you still have, you know, there, and I know things can happen in every country, but to go as far as this, that's kind of, to me, it's beyond. Now, the idea that there are now some conversation about the possibility of Tesla, listen carefully, that the Tesla now is going to consider moving some of its operation. And it's now scouting locations in India for about $3 billion plant. I won't go as far as doing that. Here is the reason why. Did you guys know that Tesla itself just slashed the prices of Tesla inside China? Why? Can anybody answer in the chat box? Why do you think Tesla embarked on this just about 2 days ago, in your opinion? Let me just see your answer, guys, here. Yeah. Why did Tesla slash the prices of its vehicles inside China? Oh, you got it, Jim Passatore, you got it. It's because of BYD. BYD's prices and the quality sort of supersede that of Tesla. Yes, Tesla is the luxury thing, whatever. But like I did mention this one way back, guys. Are you going to buy a $75,000 car? Or are you going to buy about $20,000 or even $30,000 and invest the rest? The choice is clear. So, and this is why when I read something like, oh, Tesla is going to be opening a plant in India. Well, wait a minute. You just got telecommunication companies leaving India. going back to China. Apple is one of them, going back to China. It's because there is no infrastructure inside India to do so. So when you read statements like, oh, India's going to overtake the Chinese economy by 2028. No. It's not true. It is not true. It ain't going to happen. I'm not saying that it can never happen. But to be this optimistic, when in reality you, a government in this case in India, misleading people. And to me personally, and I have nothing against Modi, but I would not shy away from staying in it. The guy is not qualified to be prime minister. Modi is a nationalist, does not have the basic understanding of what geopolitics or global economy or finance, whatever that is. You know, you can't be managing a country the size of India on the wimp of your head. You know, I don't recall either Mr. Modi granted a conference or press conference to the international press. I don't know. Is he nervous? Doesn't he know how to articulate the issues, whatever? I don't know. And I am not here to judge him. All I am doing here is presenting the facts to you and let you reach your own. But I am going to go back to the idea of hypothetically, we go with this assumption that Indian economy is going to overtake that of China. On what capacity? And let us just ask the simple question. And I know the numbers that's been provided by Bloomberg, and I know what Bloomberg, I read some of their stuff. You know, I'm not saying they are very manipulative 100%. It just, I know how it works when you have an entity that wanted to push narrative one direction or another. So even the article in itself stated, and I quote the report, meaning what Bloomberg disclosed here, explaining that for India to succeed, this kind of success will depend largely on whether the government improves infrastructure. This is exactly what the article stated. That's one. Second one has to do with, I don't know if you are aware of not or not, that India end up targeting certain companies regarding taxes. Makes you just wonder. That's another element we have to think about, is the idea of the reduction of bureaucracy. There's a lot of bureaucracy, like every other country does. No. Then you have the key factor, which is employment. While you have a massive unemployment that exists, I am talking based on facts here. I know people inside India as of today, they have their academic degrees, but they are unemployed because the government is not able to provide. That's another issue. Even though the article stated that back in 2022, the labor force participation was about 55%. Well, I don't know. Once again, I'm going to have to double check on where the source of that information is coming from. So, and that's why I don't. But even if we go with that, I'm going to just give you a comparison here, guys. And again, the comparison to put things in perspective for you. Even if we go with that state, with this stats of 55.14% as far as the labor force participation in India, in the same time frame, 2022, do you guys have any idea what was the labor force participation in China around the same time? Can you guys guess? I would really like for you to guess. Just give me a number. Just type it in the chat box, please, because I'd like to have your input into this. Give me I just wanted to get an idea from you. Just give me a number. What percentage, in your opinion, the same time frame, the labor participation in China was? Marcian Dorsier, you say 65%, a good number. Let's say two more tries, someone else. Zulfaqar, 65% as well. One more. A casual walk, you won as far as 80. You are closer. It was about 76% in the time frame. And this, once again, it just when we provide comparison with numbers. And again, we can check on the sources of all this. But the numbers sometimes speaks for themselves. I know. Numbers can be deceived, manipulated, and so forth. But the outcome, look at the outcome of the Chinese economy on the global stage versus the outcome of Indian economic output in the world. Another word, to break it down simply here. What does the world import from China? What does the world import from India? Simple as that. So now, this is going to lead to the question. And I did one time a video way back, and I didn't hold back. I questioned, what has the Prime Minister Modi achieved since he came to power in 2014? We're looking now at a decade. Where is India from 2000? I remember back then, I used to follow what was going on in India, believe it or not, when Atal Vajpayee was the prime minister, when Manmohan Singh was a prime minister. So, and I kind of, okay, when Modi came in, I was saying to myself, well, I think I'm going to have to put a question mark on this guy as far as performance. Is he capable of governing such a large country that is diverse ethnically, religiously, but with an economy that is not up to standard because of the lack of infrastructure, poverty, and so forth? And again, I was just throwing the question out there back in 2014. It was the same year I left Washington, I remember. It was the same time. So, because I used to travel to that part of the world near Afghanistan and so sort of around the area of Pakistan. I've never been in India, but we were very, very aware of what was going on there anyway. So, because here's the thing. Back then, when Modi was running prime minister, you give him the proper respect. When prime minister was running for re-election, what was he running on? And what did he promise? He promised that to elevate India's economy to the top position globally. Is it? So, because here's the thing. What I need you guys to understand, especially with this elections and so forth, India is no different than other countries. Maybe India is more. You got some millionaires or billionaires inside India. Those are the elites, like what we have here. They are influencing the trajectory, and the prime minister will have to respond to them. Not to the average India, is Indian citizens. The same thing that is happening for us right here in this country. Just look at our Congress. It's pathetic. You know, they just passed a legislation on Saturday, non-business day. But also, do you guys know why it was Saturday? Because he marked an 135th anniversary of none other than the former boss of Germany, back during World War II. You all know which ones, right? That is, to me, it was the message that Congress was sending by enacting legislation on the anniversary of that. Very, very problematic. So, but at the same time, even for our Congress, you know, it's kind of, they don't care for the average citizen. I mean, look at where Americans are. And as I mentioned to you earlier, guys, some now you have people in the United States considering moving out of the U.S. In a decade from now, mark my word on it, in a decade, you will be looking at a different America completely. Not a good one. And I'm not going to shy away from saying this. So. And again, if we are to think about what does India has to contribute to the global economy, I'll give you just the example, simple example. When it comes down to Russia and India trade for the oil, because as you all know, Russia has been providing fuel or energy, whatever, oil, gas, whatever you want to call it, to India. And what is India doing? It's paying for it in rupees. Russia ends up holding so much rupees that it doesn't know what to do with it because it is useless. It can't do anything with it. So, but what India ends up doing, as you all know, it ends up selling that oil to Europe, making twice the amount of money. Hey, it's their, they can do whatever they want to do. It's their country. So, but the question is, Russia will have now to sort of, I don't know if they came to an agreement or not. I wasn't aware of any agreements that's been reached between Russia and India regarding the payments. And I've suggested way back, maybe it makes more sense for India to pay in gold. India has massive amount of gold as well. So, and that will make perfect sense. So at least Russia can benefit from the sale of its oil. Now, will Russia stop? I don't see that because they do have a good relationship, especially when it comes down to the military aspect. But it's a business transaction. This is where... now, they could go to the arguments as far as since Russia and China, their exchange is going into yuan. Russia could request from India, yeah, just convert that to yuan and pay us in yuan. I don't see the problem with that. Let alone they are both of them a member of the BRICS, but also we all know what India, where India stands regarding the common currency inside BRICS. They're already objecting to that. And that begs the question on whose orders. Yeah, there are those who would say, well, India's looking after its own interest. I agree with that. I am not denying it. But at the same time, isn't India part of BRICS? And it should at least contribute to what the bloc as a whole, as a team, is trying to do. And what they're trying to do, to drop the dollar. As a matter of fact, now it just came to my attention. I mean, I was aware of it, but in form of confirmation that between Russia and China, completely any transactions are conducted in none other than the US dollar, officially. Saudi Arabia has moved into that direction with China regarding the transactions in oil. But Saudi Arabia also holds the key to maintaining the dominance of the US dollar when it comes down to oil transactions on the global level. And like I said before, the day OPEC makes a public announcement that we no longer accept the dollar, or they could even say we are willing to accept other denominations beside the dollar, that's the day when we put the dollar in the coffin once for all. For now, Saudis, let me tell you just something, as one who spent a lot of time in that country. As part of my work when I was in Washington, I wrote a book about the Saudis, and I'm very familiar with how they think. Saudis have one major concern, and the major concern are two, as a matter of fact, not just one, two. One of them is the amount of gold they have in the United States. Second is the amount of money they have invested in the U.S. economy. Did you guys know if Saudis pull out their money from the U.S., the economy will shut down? And that's one of the concerns. But now it's becoming clear, not only to the Saudis, but the rest of the world, especially with what Congress just did on Saturday. That legislation they passed, you know what was hidden in it? The confiscation of the Russian assets. About $6 billion. Well, wait a minute. The $6 billion doesn't belong to us. You don't take something that doesn't belong to you. You know, we all learned this when we were kids, right? Growing up. I know some might say, well, it's politics, Dr. L. Well, I understand. But also, in your right to just do whatever you feel like it, there is something called the norms. There's something called the international law. There's something called the impartiality. So if we are to be doing this, it becomes the law of the jungle here. You do whatever just because you're big or whatever. No, it doesn't work that way. But this is a reflection of how bad things are going in the U.S. for us to do this outreach and take someone else's assets. That ain't right. And for that reason, other countries now are reconsidering. But to those who already have their money here, like Saudi Arabia, like Germany, we have the gold that belongs to Germany, you know, it's kind of too late. And this is why, in my assessments, the day OPEC makes an announcement, public announcement, that we are willing to accept other currencies besides the dollar, that will be the end. And you all know what happened in Iraq and what happened in Libya and why. You all know why, right? Does anybody know? Can you guys type in? I don't want to assume here. Can anybody type in the chat box the events that took place in Iraq and in Libya? What was at the heart of it? All right, let me see, guys, here. They sell food, wild population. Okay, I know it takes a while. Gold and dinar, okay, within what context? Yes, gold and, yeah. Oh, currency, gold, dinar. You guys got it closer. Actually, one of you. Oh, Sir Hussein, oil. It's pertained to oil, gold and oil. You're absolutely correct, because both countries were pushing for the transactions to be done in other currency than the US dollar. This is why, just to let you guys know, why the Saudis somehow are tiptoeing as far as how to respond to the US. This is why they went ahead and had a conversation with Israel behind closed doors recently, because we told them. You know, despite what you read, despite what you hear. So, and this is where the problem that I believe, not a problem, but rather when you hear statements, the likes of what Bloomberg is propagating, that the Indian economy is going to overtake that of China. Come on. I mean, we all know why we wanted to maintain the tensions between India and China. It's no different than what we are doing right now in South China Sea, which, by the way, the naval drills between Philippines and the U.S. just started yesterday. It's going to be on till about May 10th. That's when it's going to be. No. And as a matter of fact, tomorrow, guys, I will be doing a live stream for you on the other channel about the upcoming trip of Tony Blinken to Beijing. That's very embarrassing. You know, if we see in this India's economy going, why Tony Blinken is not going to New Delhi? Why no American politicians going to India? It shows you where the priorities are. It is easy for us to inflate the ego of the Indian government for it to do or to do our own bidding. I mean, you all remember, we went as far as saying, the borderline between India and China. I draw a blank on the name. Anyway, we're saying that, it belongs to India. No, it does not. It does not. We wanted to make India feel good. So as to say to India, if you do our bidding, we will be always making statements about you on the global stage. That's all it was about. But in reality, we wanted to maintain the discord between both India and we never want them to come closer. And you will think, here is what bugs the mind. It's very perplexing to me. You will think that India will benefit from cooperating with China. It's its neighbor, that's one. Second, logistically or geographically, it's close by. That means any trade, any whatever, ain't going to cost India much because China is close by. And third, China has a leg up in infrastructure and so forth. It will behoove India to sort of enter into some agreement. I'm not saying that China is going to do it for free. No. But also India will benefit from. We all know how China is when it comes down to infrastructure. And we even saw it when India, when China rather, expanded that outreach to other countries, the likes of Bhutan, Nepal, Cambodia, you name it. What was the reaction of India? It's because we were pressuring India, you need to do something. This is why India ends up in the Quad and all that. What for? What for when you don't even have your infrastructure in place? You are struggling with the unemployment, the poverty level. You know, now, I don't know if it's a blessing or a curse to have a massive population. Because what's the point if you have a massive population that is living in poverty? How is that going to bode well for the government? And now that I found it very troubling that India is going ahead with sending missiles to Philippines. What for? Why are you getting involved in some... I know it's a business transaction, whatever, but why? It just doesn't... To me, when things like this happen, that's the strategic failure. In other words, there is no strategic thinking into this. I'm not saying weapon sales is very, very lucrative. But on the other hand, you're going to have to think. You have to think long term. Why would you get involved in with the Philippines in selling them missiles? Well, Philippines can get it elsewhere. And you can focus on something else. You're India in this case. And this is where I see the trouble for the Prime Minister, that is Modi, that what has he accomplished since 2014? I don't know what to account for. And again, I am not from India. I don't live in India. But again, I can read. I can know where to find the information. This is why you don't want to depend. My advice to you guys, you do not want to depend on mainstream media. Because mainstream media does not want you to think. It's like what we see with the TV stuff, CNN and all the likes. And they'll say, we'll provide you the information, we'll do the analysis for you, and we'll reach the conclusion for you. That's another word of saying, we don't want you to think. We want you just to sit there, snacking on your chips and drinking your soda, whatever, and just watch. Keep clicking, and we do all the rest for you. And the reason for that, because if you start to think, you become a threat. Same argument I'm seeing in India. So for the government to be just saying, our economy is going to overtake China in about 3 years, and we're going to become the top of the... No. Where? How? How? How, when your currency is not even accepted across the world? How, when your infrastructure is not up to standard? How, when you're still struggling for getting access to energy? I mean, I remember the port that they enter into with Iran, the Chabahar, you don't hear much about it anymore. So, or even what happened after the G20 summit. You all remember that the final communique by which India is going to build the equivalency of BRI from India all the way to Europe. How? Who's going to pay for it? You know, what the Western leaders, which you can't trust anyway, we're giving a lip service to India. Why? Because we came to understand that if you inflate the ego, it will bode well for us. So it doesn't cost the West much to just roll up the red carpet, provide a dinner for Mr. Modi in the White House, the picture with the president, an incompetent president, then, yeah, that's all it is. But when it comes down to the substance of it, there's nothing there. And I'm looking at the changes on the global financial market, for example, you know, where the gold is, where the dollar is, where the oil transactions, where the world is headed. Faster and faster and faster, de-dollarizing. Faster than I even anticipate. And now with this move by the U.S. to confiscate the assets of Russia, more and more is going to push towards that direction. So what will India do in such a setting? Because here is the thing. Whether they know it or not, meaning they, Indian government, if they think that the US is going to come to their aid or do whatever for them, they are mistaken. The same argument I will say about Philippines, the same argument I will say about Australia, the same I will say about South Korea, and you get the idea, guys. Or those in Europe, Germany, and all that. And this is where the problem that I foresee moving forward, till India resolves its domestic issues first. Without that, nothing's going to change. It's because the population is growing, but the infrastructure is not matching the growth in population. When you have a population, a growth in population, you have to create the infrastructure to sustain that growth in population. Meaning you have to have school, you have to have medical centers or hospitals, whatever you want to call it, bridges, factories, where do people work and so forth. But if you have a massive population with nothing to show for as far as infrastructure, what do you have? You're just accumulating poverty. And to what extent? And if you think any government for that matter, not just the Indian government, any government for that matter, you will think that they will learn from history as far as what took place during the French Revolution. And sadly enough, not all of us remember history or even wanted to learn from it. It's when that gap became so wide between the have and the have-nots, and all the hell broke loose. We all know what happened after that. That's what I see coming. Depends which country is going to be first. And I'll say it. I am concerned about my country here. What lies ahead? So, and for us, you know, we do have certain things, you know, in comparison to India. But for India, they got a lot of work to do. Instead of wasting time and energy and money on stuff like this, it behooves the government to really think about how to uplift the well-being of an average Indian in some remote village. And I know always I get those comments, well, you don't like India. No. I'll say the same thing about my own country here, and I do, because I don't shy away from that kind of stuff. Truth matters. So that's how I look at it. Anyway, this is what I wanted to address with you guys, and assuming Elizabeth was with me here, but she's not today. So we wanted to address this with you guys because we know in a sense of where things are headed. And again, it's very important to put this in perspective, especially considering what's coming next. My reference is to the BRICS summit that's going to be in Russia. You know, when you have a massive amount of countries wanted to join that, it tells you where the story is. It tells you where things are going. And even with that, I'm always putting that big question mark on what will India do? Because India is the weak link in BRICS, the same way Philippines is the weak link in ASEAN. And I don't know, should those countries get together on each one, of course, in each block, and say, hey, it's not working out. That's normal, like in a business transaction or relationship, whatever. If you are to enter into some partnership with some entity and you realize it's not working, what are you going to do? Are you going to be just dragging your feet, wasting your resources? Or you're going to say, hey, sit down, let's talk. We need to talk. I do see that this relationship is not moving forward and it's better for us to part ways with no harm feeling or nothing. And you move on. And that's what I believe we need to be done in both blocks, the BRICS and the ASEAN, if they want to move forward in conjunction with the changes on the global stage. Because the shift is happening whether we like it or not. But that shift is also, there are some challenges coming with it. And those challenges are in terms of the rising tensions that we are pushing for. I've said this before, guys. I do see on the horizon what lies ahead in Asia, South China Sea mainly, why we are pushing for that, those tensions to move up, why we have just allocated $16 billion for the Taiwan 65 for Ukraine and 25, if I'm not mistaken, for Israel. I can just see. But again, because that's how we've been operating for over. Even now, the what's his name? Trump just mentioned too. Oh, now he's in support of the Ukraine war. Now he's in support of the what was happening with the pandemic and all that stuff. It tells you. It's just a matter of flipping. What serves the narrative? It's why for us here in the US, there are no leaders. I said this before. And I personally, I can't trust them. I would not, you know, who are you going to vote for? There's nobody to vote for. The decent people that really wants or can serve, they just won't want to drag themselves and their families, because they'll drag you through, they'll drag you through the mud, because you want to do the right thing and they don't let you. They don't want to let you. So what are you going to end up doing? So, you know, fighting the ties. And how much can you fight, especially if you are by yourself? That was one of the reasons why, when I was approached to run for Congress, I just shook my head. You know, I know how that entity works. I will be there by myself, standing by myself, because I'm not willing to play the game. Because that game that I feel, it's not right. You are there to represent your constituents. That means the trust they have put on you. You can't betray that. And to me personally, I won't do it. It's the way it is, you know. My contribution is the way I'm doing with you guys here. And all of us at the show, at the Geopolitics in Conflict, that's the whole reason for why we're doing what we're doing. That's our contribution to make things right, at least in our capacity. That's what I can do. All right, guys, let me see a question or two from you here. And remember, I think we do have a conversation on the other location. I believe Elizabeth set it up for us. So I'm going to be on the other location. Unfortunately, she won't be able to join me today. But I will see you in the next location, and there we can talk a little bit openly. So, Sang Tan, you say, thank you, Dr. O. You're most welcome. You're most welcome. So, Anna, we truly appreciate you all, guys. And we mean it when we say that. This is not about numbers. This is not about subs. This is not, no. Sometimes you bypass all this. I know there are many out there on YouTube that just, you know, we just don't want to be that. We don't want to be that. And you're smart enough to know where to listen and what to watch. And you've been long enough with us now to know. Oh, Francis Tango, thank you so much for your super sticker. On behalf of the entire team at Geopolitics in Conflict, we say thank you to you. You wrote, what will India do if BRICS has its own currency? Will India agree? Well, that's a great question, Francis. The challenge, India already made it clear that they wouldn't want to go along with it. But that doesn't mean they will oppose it. So what are they going to do? They're going to maintain their own rupees instead of trading with the currency that's going to be created by all. And this is what I'm saying. India is becoming more and more the odd in the club. Well, once you become the odd, it becomes on you to sort of get the hint and leave. Otherwise, they're going to have to make a decision and ask India to leave. Well, India was a founding member. But just because you're a founding member doesn't give you the right to be a dead weight. The same thing for the Philippines. Philippines was a founding member of ASEAN, but that now becoming dead weight is triggering tensions in the South China Sea, because we found out and knew all along that Philippines is the weak link. The same argument I'm making regarding India in BRICS. So, yeah. India will not agree to it because they already made it clear. And I don't see how they're going to. That means, you know what it means? It means that BRICS will not have the credibility it needs on the global stage. Because any time you are strong on the global stage, ideologically, economically, and so forth, it's because of your credibility. But if it breaks, maintain this disagreements from within. No one will believe in BRICS. And my even concern is that now they want to grow. As I mentioned to you, there are about 80 plus countries wanted to join BRICS. It just shows you where things are headed. But how can you join an organization that is in chaos internally? Just doesn't make sense. Second thing, India, BRICS should not be accepting just whomever. They're going to have to think twice about that one. So I don't know what India most likely will disagree, but that disagreement will not bode well for the credibility of BRICS. That's the way I see it. So, and thank you again for your super sticker. Truly appreciate it. Mar Vega, you wrote you are one of the best when it comes to geopolitics. Thank you so much. We all of us as a team here, truly, truly, we put in time and effort behind the scenes. If you guys only know how much time goes into all this behind the scenes to, but we are not going to be just saying whatever to have this mini subscribe. No. I made that clear from day one. And again, it's a team decision, not just my decision. It's a team decision. If that, I'm done. and so far, we all agreed. No, it's what we want to achieve is to raise awareness around the world. And that's why we are so grateful to you guys all for your continued support. It means a lot to us. All right, let me see another question or two, whatever that is. Oh, Adnan Corner, I haven't seen you for a while. Good to see you, Adnan. Good to see you. Farhad Razavi, as always, good to see you. I'm going to scroll up to see if there are questions there. And after this, guys, I'm going to see you on the other location. And I don't know if, let me see if Elizabeth put it up there. Because sometimes we just do... No, it's not there, but I will see you there. I will see you there. I will be there. Okay, let me see a question here. Casual Walk. What's your view on U.S. placing mid-range missiles in Philippines, which can cover some part of China? It's troubling. It is troubling. It's troubling in the sense of, for me personally, it confirms what I've been saying for quite a while now. I did see on the horizon what lies ahead. Remember, when I wrote the book about Russia, I did the research regarding the search engine because I had to bring in China to the conversation in my writing. And of course, from that prompted me to consider writing the book about China, which I am in the process of. So, but something like this to me is provocative. You know, today you place in medium range. What would you place tomorrow? And this is why I believe, and again, I could be wrong. My instinct is telling me I'm not. It's because the 9 bases in Philippines, usually Philippines said the agreement was only about 4. They were 9. My instinct is telling me, knowing what I know as a former military myself, is that the other bases will be, each one of them will be for specific type of systems. They might even include the nukes. That's what I see coming. So to me, for Philippines, that it couldn't take stand by saying, you know what? We do want to maintain security ties with you, the United States, but we don't want you to go ahead and place medium range missiles or any type of missile on our soil. Because what Marcos Bongbong is doing to the Philippines in general, he's digging a hole. You will see. Usually I'm an optimistic guy, but for this, I don't have other word by the truth, except the truth the way it is. I do see another Ukraine emerging in that part of the world. So why the Filipino people will have to pay for that? And all they want to improve their livelihood. Simple as that. Now, if the Marcos family wants to have their assets, well, they can take it and leave. if that's what the Filipino wants them to do. But that asset doesn't belong to the family. It belongs to the Filipino people. There is no accountability. But also, you have to understand how the system is run inside Manila. The president is nothing but a puppet. Okay? It's the military that controls behind the scenes. And this agreement was made between the military in Philippines and the U.S., not Marcos. Bongbong is a wet noodle. It's too weak, politically speaking. I just now heard that he is in conversation with New Zealand. What for? We all know where New Zealand is going. And I'm here to follow up on this. So placing this medium range, it's provocation. Simple as that. And that's why I don't understand why the Philippines couldn't see that. Why they couldn't see that. Jack Robert, good to see you as always. Will India self-invest in infrastructure instead of looking for Western FDI investments? No, they won't. I don't see them doing that, Jack. They would have done it at least a decade ago because majority of the funding from the government went into armament. Because remember, Pakistan, India, that is why we are maintaining those tensions between. It's a pressure point. We can use it on both. We are using it now on the Pakistanis. For India, this is why we pressured India. Remember when Modi, Prime Minister, visited? What was after that? One thing was issued is that the U.S. will be building a naval hub in India. Why on earth would you go and build one in India? Go do it in Australia, for example, or Philippines, or South Korea, or Japan. But we decided on India because we wanted to ensure, should there be a conflict, India will be dragged into it. And that's the same arguments I can make for Philippines. The moment those missiles are placed on Philippine territory, Philippines become a target. Simple as that. Australia will become a target. Simple as that. South Korea, Japan also. So the idea of why India will not want to self-invest is because they just, we won't let them, believe it or not. We won't let them because we will always destruct India. Because we never wanted to have a country that can stand on its feet economically. Look what happened to Germany. And you are in Europe, Jack. You see what, I mean, I'll ask you, Jack. Go back 10 years ago and tell me if you don't see a big difference between what Europe was 10 years ago versus what it is today. And all because of Germany. German economy was doing great because access to cheap energy from Russia. When Germany was doing well, the whole Europe was doing well. And I used to travel even during that time. And look what we did. We focused on fragmenting German and Russian relations. And in general, to keep Europe under our thumb. That's why I say, for Europe, till it stands on its feet, nothing is going to change. The same argument I will make for India. India will not self-invest. There is no way. And foreign investments, who's going to invest in India? I mean, let's be honest about it. That article that I mentioned about Tesla put in $3 billion. Tesla had to lower prices in China. I mean, you look at the infrastructure in China, infrastructure in India. If you are a CEO, where would you invest? Choice is clear. So that's how I see it. Mar Vega, you're right. I'm not going to read that. But you are right. This is why I never believed Trump is for Trump. Simple as that. No politicians here will do the right thing because the system is corrupted at its core. Till you tear down the system and rebuild, nothing's going to change. So you are absolutely correct, guys. You can read that one. Amar is right. That's exactly what was just announced this morning, at least for me. I heard it this morning here. I don't remember this, Vanco, 60% of ATM. I do remember when the Indian government made that decision that you cannot withdraw more than 500 rupees. It's almost like confiscating the money for there. So it's unfortunate. But the bottom line, guys, is that for India, those kind of statements are self-defeating. It behoves India to really embark on a really meaningful projects, meaningful strategies, meaningful policies that will benefit average Indian. You know, Indian people are nice. Don't get me wrong. I worked with some in Washington. They're a human being like you and I. You know, we don't judge Indian people because of the government. Never ever. My advice to you guys, never ever. Because people are one thing, government is another. My last question from Hari. Hari C. Legally, can India be kicked out by other countries in BRICS? No. To my knowledge, no. Because founding members, but whether there is a clause there or not that defined this, I couldn't find it. And I am still keeping an eye open onto this, but so far, not to my knowledge. And the same arguments can be made about ASEAN. But if the countries come together and said, or there is another alternative, and you know what the other alternative is, you go ahead and create another entity and leave that as is, but you never hold the meetings, you never do anything. It's just on paper. So in this case of BRICS, the other four countries, they can go and create one, Brazil, Russia, China, and South Africa. They can go and create new one. Now, they can call it BRICS, they can call it whatever other name. While the other one, the original BRICS, still there, except that it will be no meeting, it will be no agenda, it will be nothing. So in that case, yeah, that's a possibility. But again, optics matters. It's not going to look well on the global stage. That's the way I see it. All right, guys, I'm going to sign off here, and I will see you on the other location soon. And as always, prepare yourself for changing world order. Till next time, guys. Bye-bye.